Hello and welcome to Terra Nullius Cyprus podcast. I'm Costa Constanti, and with me today I have a guest, a friend, a young man, an aspiring politician, a civil society activist, and an all-round general cool guy. His name is Hulusu Kilim. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Costa.
I've known you for some years now, and today I'm going to get to know you better, and the people listening are going to get to know you better. Before we talk about who you are today, let's jump back a few steps. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Famagusta. I was born in Famagusta. Born to a Famagustian mother and a Paphidis father.
Right, so the far west and the far east.
Yes, so we covered. We have the whole coverage of the island, and my roots reach all the way to the other side of the island, to Paphos, at Amargeti.
Amargeti,
to be specific. Yes,
I've been to Amargeti. It's an interesting place. Lots of history, lots of archaeological sites, or medieval sites, I should say. But in Famagusta, you grew up in Famagusta, you said.
Yes.
So you must know the old town quite well.
Well, Famagusta Old Town back then was mainly where the Turkish Cypriots resided, and my family were not part of that population. Mm-hmm. My family is based in Sakarya, which is outside the Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
As you go towards from the Salamis Road towards Karpasia, Sakarya was one of the neighborhoods where Turkish Cypriots predominantly resided.
Okay.
And our roots there date back quite a long, as far as I know. But our family, my mom's family, are originally from Pladaniso, where the Horgonduzeka Bay, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
And they gradually came to Famagusta. And
okay.
They are based in Famagusta.
Are they still living there?
My grandparents unfortunately passed away.
Mm-hmm.
On our family lands, we now have my sister's pharmacy, and we still have ownership of the family lands there, and now which became the highest rate of Famagusta new as it grew towards north of the town, as we know it today.
When you grew up, it must have been more of a rural area, yeah?
Well, definitely not as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
The university was a lot smaller. Therefore, the population of the students were a lot less.
Which university?
The Eastern Mediterranean University.
Mm-hmm.
And the population were mainly the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have got a massive increase in the student numbers, the people who came over to Famagusta for many other purposes, reasons. And now the local people, I believe, are now moving out of Famagusta into into more suburban areas.
I've been in Cyprus for nearly 18 years now, and I remember the first few times I came to Famagusta, urban Famagusta, the old town and whatnot. I remember this strong feeling that it was underpopulated, underdeveloped, almost like a forgotten area.
Mm.
Now, we all know, well, those interested in Cypriot history would know that Famagusta was actually one of the wealthier, denser populated parts of the island. Now, with the tragic events of the 60s and 70s in Cyprus, the region got divided. We've got, if not the world's biggest ghost city, Varosha, which is part of Famagusta. We've got the medieval city, which for the longest time was dilapidated and falling apart. Suburban northern Famagusta was underdeveloped. It wasn't developing at the same pace as, let's say, Carinya or Limassol were since the war. That has changed now. We're seeing exponential growth in areas like Trikomon, Bogaz, these areas. Boom towns, let's say. But from what I see, lack of infrastructure, lack of town planning. And I worry that what happens there will be a permanent feature of the next few decades, will come at a cost to the local population, and potentially damage the region permanently. What do you think? Do you think that I have some validity in what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Well, Famagusta is now known by the locals as a city that has turned its back to the beach, to the sea, mm-hmm. to its culture over the years, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to a beach, for example, you need to get out of Famagusta.
Yes.
There are restricted zones within the city which prohibits you from approaching the beach from yep. the city side. One thing that I am encouraged about over the years is at least the municipality there is trying to hold on to its cultural wealth by organizing, let's say, events on a yearly annual basis, such as the International Culture and Art Festival. We're trying to bring that culture back to the city's life.
Before its identity is lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I am rather encouraged these days to see the renovation works that are being carried out in the old town, the city walls, which are which I believe are the world heritage that needs to be protected. It should not be just down to the initiative of the people of Famagusta to look after these these heritage sites. That's one aspect that the local Famagustians are working on or paying attention to bring to the attention of the world and to the rest of the island to in fact say that, look, we have so much that we need to take care of. And yes, like you said, there's so much happening in terms of unplanned growth of the city and the nearby towns as well, uncontrolled developments, which are not going to go away unless the local authorities do something about it. And it is going to be there for us to deal with in the very near future, because without any infrastructure, proper infrastructure that has been put under the ground, this development is unsustainable.
It could be literally cities in quicksand the way it's going.
Yeah.
Can I just interrupt you? I know for those that haven't visited Famagusta, they won't understand the full gravity of what we're talking here. We're talking about a part of the island that has probably amongst the oldest parts of the island inhabited. It's got ancient Greco-Roman cities, it's got medieval ruins, it's got Christian cathedrals from the medieval period, it's got Ottoman mosques and hammams, baths. It's got British colonial buildings. It's got Genoese and Armenian and Carmelite. And so many different groups of people have lived in Famagusta. I mean, at one stage it was nicknamed the New Jerusalem when Jerusalem fell to Islam, with, you know, over 300 churches in the old town. A few of these still remain. One of the greatest battles in medieval history in the 1570s, when the Ottomans captured the city from the Venetians. To this day, you can see cannonballs in the sides of the walls. You can still see the stonemasons' marks on the bricks. This is incredible world heritage. It belongs to not just the Cypriots, but the global community. Unfortunately for the city, it is in a jurisdiction that is contested, that is questioned, that is sitting in between military zones. You know, Varosha to the south, the closed city, to the military fields, let's say, to the north, where you said the beaches are inaccessible because of the military sites. At the same time, you have this massive university plonked in the middle of it all. At the same time, you have these massive construction estates going on. It's almost got a feeling of being out of control. And I know that you have been involved in the Famagusta Initiative. Tell us a little bit more about what the Famagusta Initiative does for Famagusta and for this island as a whole.
Yes. So as a member of Famagusta Initiative, what I can tell you what it does is that it really tries to keep in front of people what really Famagusta is all about. Because Famagusta is not just the old town, it's not just the university. We have a vision of a greater Famagusta, which starts from Salamis, Salamina, all the way and Engomi down to the city today. And we've got the old town and Varosha. So in all aspects of the Famagusta's life, anything that needs to be taken care of, anything that it should be brought to daylight, and interventions for any correction of anything going wrong is within the scope of Famagusta Initiative. It's a group of people with an activist background who have come together, who are raising their voice for not even just about Famagusta, but the community itself. So they've done amazing work over the years, which I can tell you more than I believe 20 years. And the most recent work was in terms of bicommunal work, for example, was the establishment of the bicommunal Famagusta Initiative, of which I am also a founding member. And the work that Famagusta, bicommunal Famagusta Initiative has done received a European Citizens Prize from the European Parliament back in 2018, for which we are very, very proud of.
And you should be.
And I believe for that reason, Famagusta plays a major role in wider efforts for bringing people together, because Famagusta is a border town, a town where Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots coexisted for many years, and therefore we set the tone of bringing people together and set ourselves as an example of how we can go about reconciliation.
I think a lot of people, they're aware that Nicosia and the region, for example, is a divided city, a divided urban landscape, even a divided rural landscape. When you look at Paphos, Limassol, Larnaca, when you look at Kyrenia, Morphou, Karpathia, these are also on either side of a barrier, but far from it and disconnected, and operate as islands of their own. A lot of people forget that Famagusta as a region was a united region, that from Ayanapa, Protaras, Paralimni, Derinia, Varosha, Famagusta medieval city, all the way up to where your family was living, all the way up to Salamis, I dare even say up to Boraz at the beginning of Karpathia. This is one which for millennia was a homogenous region. I mean, if I'm to look at it from the Greek Cypriot lens, Paralimni and Derinia are suburbs.
They were raising artichokes back then.
Yeah, but these were suburbs or villages, let's say rural villages, that were satellites of Famagusta. Now, when I say Famagusta, I mean everything from the medieval city of Varosha and the northern urban area. They got severed off. Okay, it's almost like these Greek, which are now Greek Cypriot towns, have become, I would dare say the word orphans, where they no longer have their bigger sibling or their bigger parent city. They've done well for themselves. I mean, Ayanapa and Prodaraz, Paralimni are boom towns. But my vision as Costa, my vision of the region, I just can't imagine the touristic and cultural and economic value of a holiday town of Prodaraz with tourists going into the Famagusta medieval city, over to Salamis. And we got a taste of this when the checkpoint in Derinia opened up.
That's exactly what I was going to tell you as well. The fight to open Derinia crossing was purely based on the vision that United Famagusta can offer a lot more to everybody.
To both because major
the
communities.
The product, if you like, if it's a product, for those who are coming to visit our island, to have a complete taste, flavor of what Famagusta is and the region of Famagusta offers in terms of its cultural aspect, in terms of its history, in terms of its beaches and its people, the restaurants, the anything you can think of, in order to allow people to actually experience that. The Derinia crossing was key. And back then, I remember very well the opposition that was there, put in front of us, because I was one of those who were in the street with the signs for its opening. They were protesting for it. So the question always comes down to all these efforts, when there is that reaction or resistance to take steps that will bring people together. The question always is, what is better than peace and communication and connection of these people. So whatever we will do that will contribute on this front, we should do.
Yep.
We should do.
I always wonder why people struggle with this concept. I mean, don't we all want to be healthy, wealthy, comfortable, secure, safe? I mean, you have nothing to gain, but you have nothing to lose, I should say, by actually gaining all these things. I mean, I look at the hoteliers. A lot of people say, oh, the hoteliers in Brodaras and Ayanapa would never want the gates open. They would never want a reunification of the area because they'll lose business. I come and say, you have to be kidding me. As a tourist, I've got beaches all over Europe. I've got beaches all over the Caribbean. I've got beaches all over Sharm el Sheikh and whatnot. What makes your beach special in Famagusta? I come and say to you, 10 minutes down the road, you can go and see one of the world's greatest medieval cities. Another 5 minutes up from that, one of the world's greatest Greco-Roman ruins. And I also say the same thing to the Turkish Cypriot business people that are like, oh, we will lose business to the south, or we will have Greek influence in the north. Absolute hogwash. I mean, we've been coexisting on the island for hundreds and hundreds of years, and no one has lost their identity. No one has suffered.
You know what it is?
A loss of identity.
It's over the years, we forgot communication. Mm-hmm. We forgot about who we are, and mm-hmm. we started also forgetting that this island is we all belong to this island, therefore mm-hmm. having that vision. Like you gave an example of the hotelier, so I will continue from that. Hotelier in Paralimni should be able to see the fact that they can offer their customers a more complete product by promoting them the old town in the beyond the crossing mm-hmm. to actually be able to, you know, encourage them to sell themselves. You know, it goes both ways. Yeah. So
tourists are looking
for. It's the mentality. Yep. It's the lack of vision that mm-hmm. we have to understand. We have to confront in this island because we let one side of the island to one community and the other side of the island to the other community. And we do not see, while it's all in front of our very eyes, mm-hmm. the common benefit, common use that we can actually produce, bring out of all these things together.
Yep.
Because I think the main issue with this is that our communities do not understand the concept of win-win. If I win, the other one should lose.
Yes,
is the attitude that brought us to this situation that we are in today.
You're absolutely right. We have it's almost like no one's ever been educated on the win-win concept, because I think both communities feel that if it's a win-win, the minute the other wins, I lose. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Because when you both win, it's there in the word. You're both winning. You're both gaining. I mean, okay, sometimes to get a win-win situation, you might need some sacrifice. Now, what's a sacrifice? Sacrifice may be not returning certain areas, or not having a control over certain policies or whatever. But at the end of the day, if both communities look at where they're standing now, 2 days is a worst-case scenario. There's only benefits. I mean, you may not get everything. You may not achieve all your goals as one of the communities, but you're certainly going to achieve a lot more than nothing. Yeah. And so far, we're playing the zero-sum game. So far, it's been 50, 60 years where we're losing everything, because God forbid we get something and the other gets something. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of activists, civil society workers, some open-minded politicians, some even business leaders are seeing that a win-win solution, win-win future is simply beneficial for all, and certainly for our youth and our next generation. I mean, we're still pretty young, so we're still talking about our generation. look, coming back to the bicommunal Famagusta initiative, how have you felt the engagement has been with the Greek Cypriot Famagustans living in the Famagusta district and the Greek Cypriot Famagustans living in other parts of the island and the world. How has the interactions with them been?
Let me tell you this. When you engage, when you talk to people, first of all, mm-hmm. let's start from communication. I know Greek, and that was one thing I was really motivated to do purely because of my parents. They spoke between themselves in Greek when they didn't want me to understand anything. And they used the language as a separator, as a divider. With, mm-hmm. And that motivated me to turn it into a uniting factor mm-hmm. over the years. And just hearing people speak their mind and their in their language and hearing their response in their language creates a sense of sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually breaks all the taboos. So when I talk to people about Famagusta, the Famagustians, they understand, and I understand that we had no role in any of this that happened to our town, that mm. people had to leave. And we are just, I, for example, was born into the system
mm-hmm.
where I found Famagusta divided when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to actually play tennis, on the border and we would hit the ball and it would cross to the other side of the fence and we would not be able to retrieve it. And I always questioned, what is going on? What is all this?
Yeah.
And by Communal Famagusta Initiative, for example, one of the first activities that we did was the repurposing back to its original form, the Church of Agios Georgios Xerinos
mm-hmm.
in Old Town Famagusta.
The Nestorian medieval church.
Yes. Yeah. In that was one thing we did, and we started bringing together all the Famagustians, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots, to church services, which I believe is one thing that... especially in the Greek Cypriot community, is really valued and really sensitive. And understanding people's sensitivities mm. and giving them that space to actually feel at home in their town, to be able to do something that really they consider important a part of their lives, allows... genuine communication allows understanding and reciprocity.
Yes.
So that was, for me, one of the most important achievements that Famagusta Initiative managed to do, bring mm-hmm. people together, regardless mm-hmm. of the conditions or regardless of the context.
Mm-hmm.
It's a church today. I mean, Turkish Cypriots are not religious people. We are not running or chasing opportunities for visiting mosques around,
mm-hmm.
but we understand that it is an important aspect of the Greek Cypriot community's life. It's
embedded in the culture.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. So recognizing that mm-hmm. and working on these kind of things matters together, I found that really provided that space for... communication.
I think a lot of Greek Cypriots were absolutely thrilled when Agios Georgios Xerinos was symbolically handed back mm-hmm. and the key was given by, was mm-hmm. it the Mufti or the representative?
Yeah, to the Constantine, yeah. Constantias.
Yeah, the Bishop of Constantia. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was being broadcasted live on TV, which is not common in Cyprus to have live broadcasting of major events, especially in the north, when we're talking about the south. And just those scenes of the Mufti handing over to the bishop the key to the church and saying, you know, this is your church again. I mean, okay, it's one of 500 churches, but the thing is, it was the symbology behind it, the symbolism, sorry. It was phenomenal. And then when they did the Easter service, the epitaph going around, I mean, like recreating scenes not seen since the 1950s. I mean, my hair stands on end. They were magical days, and somehow We've reached that stage now where we're looking at that nostalgically, because there has been a bit of a pause. I mean, look, the pandemic didn't help. We have to be honest and fair to ourselves. We have to be fair not just to ourselves and the civil society activists, but we also have to be fair to the opposition to the peacenik movement. The pandemic did no favours to this island. I mean, it put everything on pause for a number of years. It caused a lot of, I'm not going to say irreversible damage, but it did do damage. But from what I see, there are youth now coming back up, because it's been 4 years since the start of the pandemic. Some of these kids that were like 12, 13 at the time are now reaching the age of, you know, being quite active. And I'm seeing a lot of them engaging with Famagusta, which I find fascinating. Because, I mean, when I moved to Cyprus 18 years ago, Famagusta didn't register. You didn't hear about Famagusta. You heard about Varosha a little bit. We all knew Ayan Upper and Brodara, and that was about it. For me, discovering Famagusta, the nucleus, the epicenter of the medieval city and everything radiating out from that, I felt like I discovered another island. I honestly felt like I discovered a whole new country, a whole new history. It almost, I feel ashamed to say this, but it made Nicosia feel a little bit insignificant. And I know that a lot of Nicosians aren't going to like hearing that, because the fact of the matter is that Famagusta is what it is. I mean, just look its history up. It's incredible. And unfortunately, its history does carry a lot of heaviness and a lot of darkness, especially in the contemporary modern history. Now, I know that the Bicommunal Famagusta Initiative has been quite vocal about the so-called opening of Varosha, the dark touristic movement that's happening there. You know, tourists arriving at Erdogan or Dimvu Airport in the north and getting, you know, tourist leaflets saying, visit Varosha, come for a walk through the ghost town. And, I mean, it's making a mockery of people's hostaged homes. And I'm sorry, before you say that, I have to say that I'm comforted by the majority of Turkish Cypriots that I've spoken to that are absolutely mortified and embarrassed. Embarrassed being the key word, at what the touristic authorities are doing, like turning it's dark tourism on the backs of people that are still around.
I remember when this whole thing was made public, the decision to allow visits into Varosha back then by the Bakhti, I think he was still candidate for the leadership, who is today. I felt the urge to go public and make an announcement in the social media groups that are mainly formed by the Greek Cypriot Famagustians. And to tell them that, look, this isn't what the Turkish Cypriot Famagustians want. I know for a fact, and we have got even research on this, we have face-to-face communication with the local Famagustian, Turkish Cypriot Famagustians, and we know their opinion is contrary to what is being announced today. So please do not see this as something that we approve. And on the opposite, we made a lot of noise about this decision, and we perceive it as a psychological warfare.
Provocation.
Yeah, absolute provocation. And warfare against, psychological warfare against the memories of the people, and exploitation, absolute exploitation of the status quo and what it means for Greek Cypriots, their town.
I think a lot of Greek Cypriots most certainly appreciate that clarification, because it's hard to hear the voices of Turkish Cypriots at the best of times. So
absolutely,
when movements like this happen, and you know, it's very easy, the gag reflex, to say, oh, Turkish Cypriots support this exploitation of my hometown. When the Turkish Cypriots come out and loud and clearly say, no, we're against this, we want you to go home.
Absolutely.
It's important.
It's, you know what, it's in, we cannot see these things in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
A decision that involved opening of Varoshod to visits many other things I can give you examples of are, I believe, decisions to actually, with the intention to discredit the opinion of the real, be it the Famagustians, Turkish Cypriots, be it in Turkish Cypriots in general, mm-hmm. as a community, in front of the Greek Cypriot local Famagustians or yep. the Greek Cypriot community in general. So that is all why we have to make sure that communication is kept and we have got this constant exchange of opinions and yep. To actually protect the will of the people
mm-hmm.
Vis-a-vis unification, reconciliation and understanding.
Yep.
Otherwise, we allow and we give the opportunity to the, be it divisionists or be it extremists, mm-hmm. to actually raise their voice further than those of us who are, I believe, a lot more of in numbers. Because that's why we cannot have that comfort zone
yep.
And hold back on our opinion being voiced and made public. We always have to be out there to actually prove them wrong.
Yes.
Because that is exactly what, in terms of Famagusta, in terms of Varosha, that step that was taken by the then leadership was made, I believe, for this reason,
mm-hmm.
to give that sense of hopelessness, mm-hmm. sense of inability to do anything,
yeah.
and discredit the opinion of the Turkish Cypriots, because that was the message I always wanted to give. This is not what we want.
Yeah.
And do not pay, give credit to these, this opinion. Because
it's incredible, because I often look at these leaders making these kind of decisions and think, you have absolutely no right whatsoever to cause harm, to cause psychological damage, to cause tension, to cause rifts between the communities within the community, let alone within the communities, amongst the communities.
Yeah.
Yet they get away with it. They get away with it in the sense that they do what they do, fait accompli, but voices like yours and others in Bicommunal Famagusta Initiative, others in the Bicommunal Hemisphere, and not even in the Bicommunal, even in the Monocommunal, people that are speaking up against authoritarianism, against extremism, going against breaches of human rights, these people are doing amazing work, yourself included, to ensure that the silent majority, because I think we all have to accept the fact that the majority of humans are inherently good.
Mm-hmm.
People want to be fed, they want to work, they want to live, they want comfort, they want security,
mm-hmm.
and they most certainly want it for their kids and their community and their family. There is very few people that consciously want to go against that. Unfortunately, these people tend to be the confident ones doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We have yet to learn in Cyprus the power of our vote, how we can vote in a certain way to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing this up now because I'm going to segue into what voting matters
mm-hmm.
and why it would matter to you in the upcoming European elections.
Mm-hmm.
We have an opportunity as Cypriots to change the dialogue, to change the rhetoric, to change the narrative and guide our future in a more positive, constructive, peaceful and prosperous way. On the 9th of June 2024, coming up very soon, we have the European elections and the municipal elections in the Republic. Until the last elections, it was a monocommunal candidate list, especially for the European elections. Last time we managed to, of the six Cypriot seats in the European Parliament, one went to a Turkish Cypriot, Niazi Kızılyurek mm-hmm. of Agel.
Mm-hmm.
That was, for me, a watershed moment, because we basically said to Europe, we are willing to vote a Turkish Cypriot in.
Mm-hmm.
It also said to the Turkish Cypriot community that you are not going to be always ostracized. There is hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it comes with caveats. Yes, some people think that, oh, it's under certain conditions in certain ways. Understandable. At that election, there were other Turkish Cypriot candidates. Coming to this year, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we have a record number of Turkish Cypriot candidates,
mm-hmm.
yourself included. Yeah. And I want to say, first of all, big congratulations for putting your name out there.
Thank you.
Congratulations and good luck on your candidacy for a member of the European Parliament position. Hulusi, tell me what made you make this decision. Tell me with who you're running, why you're running, what your plans are. If you're successful, what do you think it means? What do you plan to do? Tell me everything.
Oh, that's a big...
It's a big question. I want to hear everything. I'm going to sit back and listen.
Let me start from by saying the separation that we have, the ongoing separation that we have between the people and lack of communication led us to have different perceptions of the other community over the years.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I keep saying and go... I will keep saying the importance of communication,
yeah,
in order to actually break those taboos. So moving from the previous discussion we had on Famagusta and the thrill, for example, the people had about the achievement that we did with the Bicommunal Famagusta initiative, whereas it should not have been a thrill.
Mm.
It has been a thrill to experience the reactions of the people thinking, how come the Turkish Cypriots do this, and how come they believe that, they also, for example, do not agree with Varosha opening, blah, blah, blah. It is because we have common sense.
Mm-hmm.
It is because we understand. It is because we feel, we share the pain. We understand where people are coming from with their feelings and their, and we respect the memories. We need to be able to distinguish between policies,
mm-hmm.
of be it the leadership of the other countries, and then those beliefs and principles of the real local people.
Yeah.
So once we get that communicated, it becomes a lot easier to actually move forward, look forward to achieving other things together.
Mm-hmm.
So linking it now to the bigger question that you set for me, I believe only if we can trust each other, and by trust I mean giving someone the right to represent you,
mm-hmm.
is the biggest trust I believe that you can do in a social setting,
mm-hmm.
Putting your trust in them to represent you,
mm-hmm.
In a parliament, that like a European parliament, be it local parliament, doesn't matter, giving them your vote, is a very strong symbol or act to show trust. And opening up on this front, giving the opportunity to people to express their will on a ballot like the European Parliament election ballot, I believe was one thing that I could do to contribute to this, mm-hmm. effort of being one voice,
yep.
becoming together as Cypriots to express on a joint basis a political will,
mm-hmm.
and express what we envision as our future together. Through the elections, European elections, it has its own agenda. We have got a number of policies that we will be pursuing, yes. And a vote for on this basis would mean, yes, I trust you to pursue these policies, no matter what. So this is the basic, on which I decided, first of all, to go into a political movement, a political party, that is Volt Cyprus,
mm-hmm.
and decided to actually put my name forward eventually for the elections. Before I get there, I want to also mention, as the Secretary General of this very party, We understand that politically, Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots has never, in fact, expressed their political will together for during an election process in the history of Cyprus until, like I said, the European Union created the opportunity to elect somebody into the parliament through a joint election, so where everybody can actually participate. Even within Cyprus, this did not happen. So the president is still supposed to be elected by a Greek Cypriot community, and the Turkish Cypriots cannot even vote for a president of Cyprus. Well, it's now changed a little bit because of the current situation, the ongoing current situation. The Turkish Cypriots who are residing in the Republic of Cyprus can actually take part in the parliamentary elections, at least, that I know. This was due to a case that was put forward through the courts, just to be able to express political will, and the right to use vote was raised anyway. So remind me what I want to touch upon. So it's a big question that you said. Guide me, please.
So let's go to how did VOLT come about?
Okay.
In Cyprus, that is.
So the team behind VOLT believed and felt that we cannot express ourselves and get representation through the existing political parties and movements. The reason, there are many reasons, be it on the basis of Cyprus problem policies and through the different exposures of other political parties in their backgrounds, in their historical decisions that they have made, which put people off. And people have lost a lot of trust into politics, and they are refraining from taking part and raise their voice in Cyprus. And this applies to both communities.
There's a lot of disenchantment.
A lot. And especially the youth have become so apolitical and completely withdrawn their interest from a system where it actually decides for their future.
So can I just butt in for a second?
Yeah.
When I came first to Cyprus, I have to be honest with you, I was actually mortified at how political the Cypriots were. And I'll give you an example. We're the only country that I know of, or that I've witnessed in all my travels, where you can go into a village and in the town square, there are three or four cafes, not just random cafes like, Joe's Cafe, Mary's Cafe, right? But actual political party cafes like the Agel Cafe, the Digo Cafe, the Dissi Cafe, the Edek Cafe. I've never seen anything like it before in my life. So I always felt that Cypriots were too political, which was bad. Now I think, as you've said, it's overcorrected and has become absolutely apolitical in the youth, which comes with all its negativity, because whilst they were super political, they were not engaged in civil society. Now they're apolitical and also in general not engaged in civil society. It's almost like they're just as bad as each other, super political and non-political. So I think what you're doing and what you're suggesting here is we need to re-inject a little bit of political motivation, a political will, political activism in the youth. But I think it's very important concurrently to inject civil society behavior, not activism, is the wrong word, because in Cyprus, people have associated NGOs and civil society as activism, and often with a negative connotation of bicommunalism. And they portray in a very negative way, especially some certain levels of authority. I think the Cypriots have to realize that NGOs are not necessarily activists. They're not necessarily bicommunal. And they're not necessarily political. I mean, this is why they're called NGOs, non-government organizations. So I think that with the youth, if what you're saying is to introduce a little bit more political activity into them, as long as it's coupled with civil society, mm-hmm. Behaviors, it's their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, no one's going to do it for them. No one's going to grow the country. No one's going to look after the future generations except themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That is in the core of Volt itself, because it's worth mentioning that Volt started in Europe in 2017
mm-hmm.
and it got established by, like us, activists.
Yeah.
So it is... not just a party, but I would say a political movement.
Movement, yes.
It has its political agenda, which is pan-European, unity of Europe, sustainable development and green policies and everything. We can talk about that. But the point I want to make is this movement that has established itself in 30 other countries in Europe, we've thought that it really can help the youth in Cyprus also find itself an umbrella to express their political will as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when we decided to establish Volt in Cyprus, we thought we would do it on a bicommunal basis.
Yep.
So, pan-Cypriot, multicultural,
mm-hmm.
Multi-communal basis. So we are addressing a number of missing parts of the political life of Cyprus. We are creating the ground, creating the space for all Cypriots to come together and represent themselves, and creating the youth, for the youth to actually become reactivated
mm-hmm.
within their circles and in the society to have a say. And we are creating a bridging opportunity between the civil society organizations. And what I see civil society is advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
So to give them that voice as well, to actually maximize the effect their policies, their work is having within politics.
Mm-hmm.
So because over the years, what I am observing is that the effect or the reflection of the civil society's work on many different aspects is no longer reflecting in the political scene.
Mm-hmm.
So... there's something it's like a deafening noise that is actually taking away the concentration of the political sphere in different subjects. And what really people are caring about, the civil society cares about, the problems that they're facing are falling on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm.
So one, the problems that we face by the politics of Cyprus and the disappointments that people are experiencing, to what civil society is experiencing in their efforts and the struggles that they are actually not being able to bring across the message to the politicians.
Yeah.
And thirdly, the youth not being anymore, listening or caring about politics, what's happening, because they became either indifferent because of all this corruption situation, the lies that's been thrown into the system, or the false promises that are being made by the existing players in the field. Volt wanted to create the space for all these people to actually mm-hmm. be able to start reconsidering their opinion about politics
mm-hmm.
and become more active and have the courage. This is in its essence, to encourage people, to empower them again mm-hmm. and give them back the voice that actually this is what we need.
Have you seen a lot of Cypriots reacting to vaults?
I can tell you from my experience for the Turkish Cypriot community, for instance, the only thing I kept hearing is that, oh my God, this should have been done a long time ago.
Yeah.
Why have we not done this before? This is what we needed all along, because the opinion of Vault for Cyprus problem is very, very clear, very simple. We say there's only one way to unite the country, and this is a mutual understanding and mutual acceptance of a solution plan. Mm-hmm. Therefore, what will we have in front of us is a federation model that can be accepted and as it stands by the two communities. Anything other than mutual acceptance is not a solution. It's very simple. Yeah. So we are advocating for this. Therefore, we are also saying, while we advocate for this, we got to act on this basis as well.
Yeah.
So to show people that, yes, it is possible to unite the island, and the day after, what we will face in terms of a system whereby we will need to work together around the same table, we are doing it already.
Yes, 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 yes. I really want to pull that out, because this for me has been the essence of what I've seen happening at Vault, is that you are already creating the foundation for a post-reunification structure where Greek and Turkish Cypriots are working together, are dealing with each other, are compromising, they're fixing problems together. I mean, this hasn't been done before, even before the 1960s and 70s. I mean, it's about time. And like you said, people are obviously saying to you, this should have been done a lot earlier. I also have to add to this that I don't know whether it's because of what you guys are doing at Vault, but I've noticed that, okay, a girl had a Turkish Cypriot candidate last elections and this time as well. But I've seen that now the Greens also have a Turkish Cypriot candidate, but it's no longer taboo. I haven't heard, apart from your extremist elements, which, let's be honest, they're going to be extremist regardless of what happens, I haven't heard the mainstream society reacting negatively to this, which has been very encouraging. Yeah. Are we there? Are we maturing as a state, as a people? Are we finally maturing and becoming positive to multiculturalism? And I love that word that you used before, and rather than bicommunalist, we're becoming multicultural, because there's more than two people on this island.
Oh, yeah.
Are we getting there? Are we becoming multicultural? Are we accepting our reality?
Look, we have to recognize that this island has been divided now, and the people have been divided now over 50 years. This brought with itself a lot of taboos, a lot of lack of communication, lack of trust, and everything with it. So it is rather unthinkable so far for some people that we have such a structure. We came up with Vault, and it is difficult for people to actually get their heads around, because they have not seen such an example political party can happen with the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots working together.
Yeah.
It's a lot of barriers that we are actually working on. And yes, this is exactly what we need. We need to actually break all those taboos, communicate with people what we are doing, why we exist, what are we trying to do. And in simple terms, what do we all want? We all want peace, a peaceful life. And by just having a common understanding on that basis allows us to advocate for everything that we are advocating today. And are we getting there? Are we there yet? No, we're not there yet.
No.
We have a lot of work to do. But we found the way, let me put it that way.
Well, there is a lot of work still needs to be done. We talk about the island post-reunification and all our hopes for that. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, whilst we are still divided, I don't think people have realized how many things are, and I use the word unfortunately, united, such as human trafficking.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best examples of bicommunal cooperation on this island. We have the issue of sewage in Nicosia, for example. Without bi-communal cooperation, we would have serious problems on both sides of the city, okay?
Yeah.
The environment. Yeah. I mean, what happens on one side of the island is happening on the other side of the island because we're such a small place. We're not talking about something the size of Australia or Canada here.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But what happens on this island affects everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner we wake up to that, pre-reunification,
yeah,
we're at least laying the ground for post-reunification.
Yeah. Those of us who are most even pro-union and are advocates of reconciliation, I believe they even have some concerns when it comes to uniting the island and how it would work, because they have not seen the example. And they, on the day when you would vote, for example, at a referendum, you would think, yes, I want. But the next day, how does it work? How do we come round together and work on policies? How do we, have that trust established? Do we have this? So this is where VOLT comes from. For all those who have got the courage to and the will to unite this country, we want to be an example so that we reassure people that, yes, we can do it. We can sit around at the same table, find solutions to our problems, like you said, be it the environment, because this environment is one.
Yeah.
Today, for example, there are measures being taken in the southern part of the divide to bring down the emissions and get cleaner air, clean up the environment and avoid any damage to the forestry and everything. What about the north part of the island?
Yeah.
Don't we need the measures as well to apply? When we are reducing CO2 emissions in from and going into electric cars in the south of the island, does... should we not really consider doing for the north, you know?
Let me highlight something.
All of these things that have to be considered all together.
Exactly, because you know that Nicosia has one of Europe's most polluted airs?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, the rest of the island in the south has cleaner air than Europe on average, but Nicosia has higher. And you question why. It's because literally 100 meters down the road, you have a lot of vehicles that are not EU compliant.
Yeah.
So they're pumping out toxic fumes and whatnot. A lot of quick separates aren't aware that, you know, you need the entire island to be playing the fiddle. Yes. Otherwise, you're never going to get...
Yeah.
You know, we often as Cypriots look at other countries for best practice examples. We look at the multicultural countries like Canada, the US, Australia, New Zealand. We look at federations like the groups like the European Union. We look at, we look at Belgium, for example, how it runs with different communities and whatnot. And we aspire to be like them. But I feel that we're a long way off, even post-reunification, we're a long way off replicating these very advanced cultures and economies and states. Looking at VOLT as a much more localized, a much smaller and a much more relevant example of how the communities can work together is much more important than looking at the foreign states. I am one of these people that you just mentioned earlier that I'm all for reunification. I'm very keen for it. I'm fighting for it. But I am concerned about the day after. I am concerned about how is it going to work? How is it going to work efficiently? And why do I think this? Because as we are on either side of the island, we are most certainly not operating efficiently. I mean, it is the corruption is rife, lack of transparency, the lack of accessibility to information, the environmental hazards that we have. I mean, we're rife for our own destruction. I often say to people, right, if we're going to reunify the island, how are we going to, in parliament, in a federal parliament, how are Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots going to cooperate to the level where they can get cars off footpaths and kids in schools and, you know, medical institutions to a top quality level, when monocommunally we still haven't achieved that.
Yeah.
The answer that often gets given to me is, it helps with checks and balances having other parties in parliament. I am one that tends to disagree with that, because I see that as the current Republic of Cyprus parliament has more and more parties in there, checks and balances, I could be wrong here, but don't seem to be efficiently working. I stand to be corrected on this. However, and this is where I find VOLT so important, you're giving a real life, real time, live example of how it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me hope.
And you know what? It also breaks a lot of other taboos. If you look at the structure of VOLT,
mm-hmm.
We get some questions from people sometimes. So do you have like a quota for Turkish Cypriots in the executive? I said, no. What kind of quota are you talking about? Because, you know, in the federal system, that you would have like quotations, you know, yeah. for how many Turkish Cypriots will, you know, be in the ministries, blah, blah, blah. I said, listen, the point is showing people that we can represent one another,
mm-hmm.
and we speak the same language when it comes to what we want from our future,
yep.
In this country. If you can convince the people, and the mentality is set by the people who they want to see VOLT as a multicultural, multicommunal party,
mm-hmm.
so the supporters of this party will question and make sure actually that in the executive there will be a member from the Turkish Cypriots or a member from Maronites, mm-hmm. or and Greek Cypriots all together, and they would not vote for anything else. So if you have this mentality,
yeah.
in the minds, so what people, what so we cannot go contrary to our vision,
mm-hmm.
Complete representation of the people of Cyprus within the political party level, you yeah. know, then you don't need quotas actually yeah. to impose on you. You have to have this many.
You could end up with the problem of having multiple quotas. So you could have whether it's communal quotas or gender quotas.
But gender, yes. Yep. Gender quota we have.
Okay.
It's not a quota. Mm-hmm. It's equal representation, understanding. So mm-hmm. that reflects in every aspect of how VOLT actually structures itself and works. We do have a co-presidency structure. So we have a male and a female president.
Who are they?
Alexandra Talidis and Harilaos Velaris.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have co-vice presidents of VOLT, one male, one female, is Andromachis Sofokleous and Panos Paras.
Mm-hmm.
And we have got our European elections candidate list, three male, three female. Them being, again, Andromachis Sofokleous, myself, Lysia Dimitriou, Sofia Vasiliou, Makarios Tourouchotis, and Nicholas Kyriakou.
Okay.
So a list that I'm very proud of. It really shows and reflects the identity of VOLT. If you look at each individual and where they come from, their experiences reflects very much the values of VOLT and what we want to show ourselves as. Mm-hmm. So anti-corruption,
mm-hmm.
Transparency of the political system, attention to gender equality and the human rights approach. Definitely on top of all these is the will to unite Cyprus and the unity of its people. We are trying to actually act in a way that actually reflects how we want the society to be,
mm-hmm.
and show people, yes, it is possible. Yes, we have to be encouraged, and we have to actually have the courage to step outside our comfort zone, because being in comfort zone does not get us anywhere.
Yeah.
We have, because Cyprus has been in its comfort zone for a long time.
The comfort zone, no, otherwise known as the status quo.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So,
and as we've seen, the status quo is not sustainable. I mean, we saw the incidents in Pila last
year.
No. Yeah. I mean, the status quo, even if it was sustainable in a security sense, is not sustainable in a cultural, demographic, economic,
mm-hmm.
environmental, you know, humanitarian. I mean, in migratory. I mean, there is so many criminal. There are so many things that the divide of this island hinder. I mean, sometimes people say, oh, you know, well, then, you know, you keep talking about the European Union and borderless regions and whatever, you know, how come all the other countries on earth are doing fine with hard borders between them? Well, that's because those are hard borders between different states with different people often. There are tension points like Kashmir and, you know, South Ossetia or Nagorno-Karabakh and places like this. This is not an island for hard borders.
Mm-hmm.
This island has never had hard borders until the last few decades. It is an island with 10,000 years of history. It's an island that is embedded in multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's always existed. Take a walk around Famagusta to see the hard, tangible, physical, in-your-face evidence
mm-hmm.
of coexistence and multiculturalism. Across the island to this day, we have multiculturalism. In the Republic, you have, I think it's 24% of the island, 24% of the population is non-Greek Cypriot.
Mm-hmm.
In the north, I mean, the statistics are hard to come by, but, I mean, we know that it's almost a 50-50% breakup of the, you know, indigenous Turkish Cypriots versus the multicultural community.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not unfamiliar with the concept of multiculturalism. And all we're asking is expand that multiculturalism to include everyone, not just some.
And it's actually in our culture. We are very welcoming people. We are good hosts.
Yes.
And we are very accommodating. And it sometimes baffles me where sometimes this hostility comes from. And I can...
Is it ignorance and fear?
It yeah, mainly fear. Mm-hmm. And I think fear is under many problems that we have.
Yeah.
Because if you will know what fear caused back in... during the World War in Nazi Germany,
mm-hmm.
fear was what, in fact,
drove it.
Brought about everything, all the mm-hmm. troubles. So having fear in mind makes people do many things that they normally otherwise wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the work needs to be, communicating and having open dialogue and listening to people. And understanding their fears and taking actions accordingly.
And addressing them.
Addressing them.
You know, it's interesting, the issue of fear. I've always felt that Greek Cypriots, for example, speaking as a Greek Cypriot, have always felt fearful of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And since the gates opened, the unknown has become lesser unknown. We're interacting more with Turkish Cypriots on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
Where we've got groups coming together, whether they're NGOs, whether they're political groups like Volt. There's projects happening. There's Turkish Cypriots employed in the south. I mean, there is a lot of interaction going on. So the fear levels have dropped drastically. That's happened in the last nearly 20 years now, okay? 20 years ago, we had the Annan Plan, and the Greek Cypriots overwhelmingly said no to it. What I do note, however, is that 1 in 4 said yes. 1 in 4 said yes to reunification with the unknown, with something they feared. They said yes to taking the leap of faith to reunify the island and integrate with the Turkish Cypriots without having gates open for a long time. Without having bicommunal projects, without having colleagues that were Turkish mm-hmm. Cypriots, without having students that were Turkish Cypriots amongst them. So 1 in 4 blindly, without, with the unknown, with the abyss in front of them, said yes. I know that people always talk about the 3 in 4 that said no. And maybe it's the optimist in me, but I'm like, well, we started with the worst case scenario and got 1 in 4. After 20 years, with all the interactions that have happened, with all the people that have met each other, with all the friendships or acquaintances, why don't I say friendships, with the acquaintances made, with the fear, with the devil's horns that we perceived on the others, long gone.
Absolutely.
Surely we've passed the 2 out of 4 threshold. Surely it's much higher. I do feel, with conversations I had with people, that where we were in 2017 in Crans Montana, we came very close, perhaps even better than the Annan plan. We came very close. We all feel disappointed. We all point the finger of blame in certain directions. That's not for us to discuss now, but we do feel that we came damn close to taking that big leap. Closer than we ever have, to be honest with you. Closer than the Annan plan. See, in the Annan plan, we had a plan in front of us to vote on, but we didn't know each other then. I think now we know each other.
Yep.
So we need to get past Crans Montana, pick up where we've picked off, and get to a new, I don't want to call it an Annan plan because that's been demonized now, but you know, let's call it the Hulusi plan. The Hulusi and Costa plan for peace and reunification of this island. You know?
Sounds good.
I honestly believe we can get there. I honestly believe we can get there. We just need some leaders with willpower.
We have to give it to the civil society over the past 20 years, what they have done with the reconciliation of the people. We have to give it to the people who are progressive in mind. And we can see the infiltration of this communication and the relationships being established between the people at the individual level over the years. You are very right. And which makes the, you know, rules of the game and conditions a lot more different than back in 2004. However, we have to deal with one major thing, which is corruption on this island. And I believe back in Crans Montana, what stopped the situation from going across the finish line was mainly corruption. In its essence, that's what it was. So if we can manage to actually progress on that front, which will then clear make the leadership on both for both communities to have the common goal of their leaderships as the improvement of the lives of the people. creating a safer, more promising future for all Cypriots on this island as their priority, then we have a very strong chance of achieving it. And I believe on paper, it's been done.
On paper, it's been done.
On paper, it's there.
Yeah. Well, actually, sorry, and I just let me just cut you off.
Yeah.
I find it ironic that we're one of the very few conflict zones in the world that starts negotiations with the final image being presented.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Like you see them discussing, we're going to unite. We're going to unite under a bi-zonal, bi-communal federation with political equality, with sovereign, unitarian and sovereignty. I mean, no other conflict zone starts with this ideal final picture. And all we have to do is build the staircase to that nirvana, you know.
Let me point on to something else as well, while you, now that you said it about the model again. Ideally, yes, we need one united country. Federation, I believe, is a stepping stone to achieving that ideal country. We have to consider the fact that this island has been divided the last 50 years. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done at the ground level and community level to re-establish that trust, re-establish that identity, common identity that we have. The
cooperation.
I mean, the next day I would like to see the next generation grow up in schools with Turkish and Greek language mm-hmm. in their curriculum, and it compulsory.
Yeah.
So we can actually speak each other's language from the onset.
Yeah.
Then you have the sustainability factor of a solution also established.
Foundations are laid for.
Yes. Yes. And then you can then become a Cypriot where you either now then you can have a Turkish speaking Cypriot and a Greek speaking Cypriot. No problem.
Because you, to get to a unitary state, if that's the ideals that, that people are looking for.
Some people are. And I
but you will not get there without a federation first, perhaps. I mean, you need to, like you just said, you need to reestablish the trust, the cooperation, the history.
It's a must. Yeah. It's a must. We have to reestablish that understanding of unity.
Yeah.
We have to be able to give people the reasons, you know, and the tools to be able to establish that united front.
Mm-hmm.
But from where we stand today, we can't get there unless it's through a federation.
Yeah.
So federation offers us the opportunity mm-hmm. to work on our future.
Yeah.
If without that, we don't have a future that we can really be proud of and for the next coming period. So this is why I believe Volt is very important on this aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I believe. If we have got in the near future an opportunity to unite the island, which we were saying is mm-hmm. on paper, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Next time you go to vote, doesn't matter local, doesn't matter European, doesn't matter. Have that in mind. Who will better serve the country, the people, and think, have the benefit of all Cypriots in mind, no matter what they do. And don't look beyond the borders.
Mm-hmm.
If we say we are in Europe, and we are Europeans,
mm-hmm.
yes, European Union provides us this basis of many, in many aspects, to have a better community, quality of life. But it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we need to do to improve that system as well? What we have to think about all these things. And as Cypriots, what can we contribute to this effort? Because Europe is where we belong.
Mm-hmm.
Europe provides us with this sense of security and sense of, you know, mm-hmm. Basis for to have a functioning and as a country,
mm-hmm.
Is the standards. But there is a lot of work to do also in Europe. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we need to also contribute as Cyprus to that effort.
As Cyprus, we need to contribute to Europe.
Yeah. So Europe has provided the basis, mm-hmm. but we have a lot also to do. And because if we see ourselves and our future in Europe, we also have to work towards it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about in words. We are Europeans, and we just can't keep moaning about what are the flaws of Europe and just ask ourselves, what are we going to do about it?
Well, let's misquote JFK now, but say, let's not ask what Europe can do for us, but let's ask what we can do for Europe. Well, look, on that note, I want to thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me today. I'm wishing you the very best of luck on your candidacy. I look forward to welcome you back either as an MEP or as Hulusi. Either way, it's a win-win for Cyprus because I love to keep you on the island, but I also love to send you to Brussels. So, all the best.
Thank you so much.
Keep it up. Guys, check out the Bicommunal Famagusta Initiative. Go and visit Famagusta. You haven't lived, you haven't seen Cyprus until you've seen Famagusta. And like I said, that ranges from Cape Greco all the way to Salamis and Bogas in the north. Thank you so much. See you again.
Thank you very much.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.